The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
It is the APC Podcast here at acmepackingcompany.com, part of SB Nation and Vox. The NFL draft has concluded mercifully. All 89 televised hours. It's actually more than that. I was just trying to rattle off a random large number, but I think it's, is it more than that? I don't know, whatever. I am Zach Rapport, dialing it in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and joining me to talk all things Packers NFL draft results. First, we have Ben Foldy out in Brooklyn, New York. Ben, how are you?
I'm good. I realize now that I should have borrowed or gotten the mic stand from Alex as well, because I'm just sitting on my couch holding a mic like a weirdo.
Don't you casually do that all the time anyway?
I mean, I do, but it's sometimes it gets annoying. Be nice to put my arm down.
And joining us as well, all the way from Columbus, Ohio, hot off more playoff hockey and sounding as sultry as ever with his raspy voice, it is the man who keeps the lights on here, our fearless leader, Evan Tex Western. Tex, how are you, man?
I'm good. Another big home win for the Blue Jackets last night, and we got a fun draft class to break down, so I'm in good spirits.
Hell yeah. Well, actually, before we can get into the draft, which we will do momentarily, we wanted to hit on some breaking news today. The Packers have exercised their fifth-year option on Kenny Clark, meaning that he will stay a Packer through at least the 2020 season. Tex, we basically knew this was coming, but how happy are you if you're Mike Pettine right now?
Oh, you got to be ecstatic. I mean, this is the guy who has really developed into your force in the center of that defensive line, really ever since the kind of coming down the home stretch of that 2017 season. So he's your best defensive lineman right now, and probably will be for the foreseeable future. And I would be very surprised, if I'm being honest, if he actually plays in 2020 on that option deal. I bet that next offseason he ends up signing a long-term contract extension. But it's good to have him for sure for another 2 more years regardless.
Doesn't this bit of good news, Tex, make you want to break out into a song?
Kenny Clark.
That should be, I mean, like, I'm going to be honest, I'm like, Go Pack Go is not the most inspiring chant. I'm a fan, whatever, but I don't, it's not exactly like winning on originality, but I would much rather join into a Kenny Clark do.
Let's start that.
It should be a thing. I mean, there's no reason not to. It's much better than Coon.
Hey, he's part of the media team now. Lay off.
It's not a knock on Coon. It's a knock on the fans and our relatively lazy nonsense.
It's, yeah, any ooh syllable is easy to chant for sports fans anywhere, but I really like the call and response possibilities of the Baby Shark reference. So I think that's a good option.
Yeah. Kenny Clark, DJ Chark could have gotten the same thing.
Oh, we've really gone off the deep end now.
Yeah, hey, pun intended. Tex, you and I actually, we hopped on the pod here on Thursday night to break down the first round picks 1 and 2. But Ben, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't give you a chance to give a quick take on Rashawn Gary and Darnell Savage, the Packers' first round picks, before we move on.
I'm not going to lie. I was disappointed in the Rashawn Gary pick when it happened. I think that's not particularly unique in Packers fandom. I'm not totally past that skepticism, I guess. To me, it seems that taking that bigger risk at 12 is a risk. I don't know. I don't have a better word for it.
Eloquent.
The lack of production is worrying. And when I watch the film, I see the same things everybody else does, which is, why is he so slow getting off the ball if he's this like physical machine? I have to hope that the Packers see something I don't. And, you know, and now that he's in the fold, I'm pulling for him. But I don't think it's, you know, I should live and die by my takes. And my initial take was not great. That said, I feel pretty much the complete opposite about the Savage pick. I think it was great to move up. I feel like what we heard coming out of the press conferences afterwards makes it pretty clear that they thought Baltimore was going to take him at 23 or 22, wherever Baltimore was, considering that they, you know, have a pretty close connection to Baltimore in the scout room now, and in general is pretty good at drafting secondary. I think that's probably a vote of confidence, both in the reality of that outcome and in that, in their evaluation of the player. And you know, everything I feel about watching Rashawn Gary's tape and feeling underwhelmed, I feel the opposite about Savage. And like, I watch that tape and all I see is, you know, ridiculously good closing speed. I think if there's one thing that can define a Gutekunst draft so far, it's that like athlete's Uber Alice. And, that is really clear in the Savage tape, and you know, I don't see anything not to like. I mean, fast reactions, great instincts, like true center fielder to pair up with Amos. And I like the tape a lot more than I liked even the Josh Jones tape, and I liked that tape just fine. But yeah, Savage has me really excited.
Yeah, and for more on Rashawn Gary and Darnell Savage, I would implore anyone who hasn't yet to go back and listen to Tex and I doing our rapid reactions over the weekend. That got a lot of traction, so hopefully you guys have all listened to that already. Before we move into the rest of the draft here, now that it's all complete, I kind of wanted to, we haven't done note nugs in a while, hashtag note nugs, got to keep the brand strong, and I kind of thought we should do that in terms of our overall feelings here on the draft. I'll go first and give my notable nugget coming out of this draft, which is that the Packers sort of seem to say that they are, by and large, okay on offense to roll out really what they had last year. And there was a lot of talk about taking a tight end early or offensive line super early, and what can we give Matt LaFleur to sort of boost this offense, an offense that really underproduced relative to expectations last year. And for the most part, it seems like what they're doing is stocking up that defense and trying to win a bunch of 20-point ball games. I don't know. That, I thought that was really striking.
Now that you know that Aaron Rodgers was playing on a broken leg, does that make you feel differently about the offensive performance last year?
Yes, most definitely.
Knowing that, I don't look at last season and say that was a completely ineffective offense. And then even today, I was helping a friend in a dynasty draft, and it got me thinking about like Ty Montgomery. I was, you know, we were talking about Justice Hill. It just reminded me of how many weird, fluky losses there were last season. And, yeah, and it, I, you know, I think the parts were there, like, to have a good year. It just, you know, and I'm not, you know, maybe coaching was the part that was missing, but, and Aaron Rodgers, you know, whatever part of his leg was busted up.
Tibial plateau fracture.
Yeah, tibial plateau was maybe not there. But yeah, I mean, I don't look back at last season and go, oh, like there was this gaping hole on the offense that just needed to be filled and really needed, you know, a lot of energy thrown at it. I don't know if Tex, if you have a take on that.
Well, I'll just say that I tend to agree with their evaluation of the roster. I mean, I'm a huge Aaron Jones fan. Ben, I think you and I are probably some of the bigger Equanimeous St. Brown fans.
I'm around. The king of the fan club,
right? And I'm right there with you on that one, man. I think he's really going to be something special. So with him and with what Valdez Scantling showed, and with Geronimo Allison coming back, I think the one area where you had some real room, or the two areas where you had real room for improvement, were tight end and offensive line. And as we'll get to, they did end up addressing those. So I agree with their assessment. I agree with Zach, with your assessment of how they view the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, so my notable nugget is that I was surprised that they didn't take a wide receiver, and that was more about the way that the draft board was falling than it was the way, I didn't think they needed to spend early draft capital on a wide receiver, but there were names in the fourth and fifth and so on that I was pretty into. And even as undrafted free agents, I mean, I'm sure they probably got in touch with Stanley Morgan Jr. and made a pitch, but, you know, he signed with the Bengals pretty much right, you know, within like 10 minutes of the draft ending, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, Emmanuel Hall is the other one that I had my eye on when he went undrafted, and unfortunately he ended up signing with Chicago right away, so that was a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, so there were definitely names later on that, and I was wondering if there was kind of going to be a, you know, just as there was a Ted Thompson second round wide receiver prospect, maybe there was like a Gutekunst fifth rounder type guy, you know, somebody who tested really well, maybe from a smaller school. Yeah, and I'll admit, I was surprised that the Packers stood as pat as they did at wide receiver, but that's not to say, I mean, that was in a way almost because I doubted myself, you know, like just because I think Equanimeous St. Brown is legit doesn't mean that the Packers do. But I do think that, you know, depth is a little worrying on the offense at wide receiver. But, you know, I hope they're right, I guess is where I'm at. But you know, Kumerow is maybe legit. You know, I'm not, I don't look at wide receiver and go like, oh my God, who's going to catch the ball?
Yeah, well, for my note, Nog, I'll go with Gutekunst giving Mike Pettin lots of fun toys to play with. I think you look at all these picks on defense, and you have versatile guys who can play multiple positions. I mean, Gary can come in, he can rush off the edge for you, he can put his hand in the dirt and be an interior rusher, very similar to Za'Darius Smith in that way. And I think it kind of goes along with the philosophy that they're going for, that they want bigger, more versatile players on that front seven. Even the fifth rounder defensive lineman that they picked up, similar issue where he can play multiple positions along the defensive line. So that's my thing is Mike Pettin's got a lot of fun new toys to play with. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what his scheme looks like this year with personnel that fits better his philosophy than what he had last year when he was still kind of transitioning over from the personnel that were drafted and brought in to fit in Dom Capers' scheme instead.
On that note, I think the first take on Savage was, and I think I might have even fallen for this too, was like, oh, it's Micah Hyde, you know, this kind of like hybrid nickel corner safety. And then the second I watch his film, I'm like, no, that would be a huge waste.
Yes.
But yeah. What I do think is that it frees up Josh Jones to be a true dollar backer. Like, you don't need him to be pretending to be a center fielder that he isn't anymore. And so I do think that even if Savage, who I think can play corner and can, you know, go into these, you know, diamond nickel heavy packages. I mean, every time Ben Fennell's on, he talks about how, you know, whatever the Packers, I think like their base is basically dime at this point. And he is a good piece for that. Even if he's not being used for his like corner versatility, like he opens up the field for other players to do more and still have kind of smart, safe speed on the back end.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's actually take a quick ad break and we'll be back with a pick by pick discussion right after this.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
All right, we're back. So let's just get started. Round two, pick 44. It's Elgton Jenkins. The G, I have learned, is silent. Mississippi State offensive lineman. There was a run on linemen around this time, so it's hard to know who's telling the truth in terms of where Jenkins ranked for the Packers, but versatility was clearly a selling point here. He's played all over the offensive line. In fact, even though the Packers apparently picked him to play guard, he was Todd McShay's third-ranked center in the draft. Tex, I can't say for certain that the OL is vastly improved this offseason, but they certainly have a ton of options now.
Definitely. And the depth at the very least should be significantly improved. You know, bringing in Billy Turner to play guard or tackle, now bringing in Jenkins, you've got a guy who might be capable of starting on day one at guard. And now you've got a real bona fide backup if something were to ever happen to Corey Linsley too. So looking down the depth chart, this line looks a heck of a lot better than it did last year. You're not going to be relying on Byron Bell to play a major role in the two deep, which is certainly a good thing for anybody who watched him play last year. So as far as Jenkins goes, though, I think we all kind of fell into the trap of, well, the Packers never draft college interior linemen. They only draft guys who played tackle. And that was why he wasn't really on my radar, but he checks off all the other boxes. And he did even have that little bit of experience playing tackle in college early on before he moved inside. So maybe he should have been on our radar, but there's some highlights of him from the Senior Bowl just mauling people. And by all accounts, I mean, he's a great guy in the locker room, real high character guy. Everybody raves about him. And I think the other kind of bonus here is that the Packers got a little bit of an inside look at him when they rehired Luke Getsy to be the quarterback's coach, because Getsy was Mississippi State's offensive coordinator the last couple of years. And so he got an up close and personal look at Jenkins, and I'm sure he probably vouched for him to the scouting staff and the personnel department. So from all those perspectives, I like the pick. I was surprised by it, certainly when it happened. But, you know, when you look at where the major needs were here, I think it makes sense, especially if the team looks at Billy Turner as probably being a tackle, you know, maybe in 2020 and beyond.
I agree with everything you said, particularly the Luke Getsy thing. I also think that, you know, it was a surprise, but once I dug into it, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. The one thing, and maybe this is an exercise you guys don't want to do, but I was curious. I like to go over drafts by looking at who else I would have taken in that spot, or like other possibilities. And I'm just curious, I mean, is there anybody that, like, you know, I know my initial reaction was like, what? There were all these other guys on the board still. And I'm just kind of curious who those names were for you guys, if any.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people were really big on Irv Smith, the Alabama tight end. I was never as big a fan of him as a lot of people were.
No, I wasn't either.
No, there were wide receivers there, and maybe,
yeah,
you know, for me, a guy like Paris Campbell, I think, could have been a really fun piece in this offense for LaFleur, getting him the ball in space and letting him make things happen with his feet. So, you know, even like an AJ Brown, either one of the Ole Miss receivers at 44, I think you can make a case. I was always, you know, anti DK Metcalf at 12, but you know, it was very much, that would have been like a Josh Jackson for me, where last year I wouldn't have been crazy about him at 14, but at 45, I was loving it. And if the Packers had taken Metcalf or AJ Brown there at 44, I would have been perfectly happy with that. So from that perspective, yeah, I think receiver was actually what I was probably expecting more than anything else at that point.
And there was a run after that. It was like all the names that I kind of thought they might go with. I mean, I didn't think that Arcega Whiteside and Isabella would come off the board that early. I don't think it's a mistake that they did. Like, I don't think those teams were reaching. But Chase Winovich was another name that I was, you know, throwing around there. Polite, you know, was on the board. He dropped a lot more than I think people expected. And the other, I mean, Greedy Williams is the other name that really kind of, I was like, whoa. But, you know, I think the Browns probably made a smart pick in taking him where they took him. But, yeah, I don't, you know, when I look at the team's needs and you know, what I imagine was their reasoning for doing what they did, I think it checks out.
Texan, you mentioned the possibility of a tight end there at 44. So why don't we just transition to round three, where the Packers did address the tight end position, picking up Jace Sternberger from Texas A&M, a guy whose, his combine numbers were not eye-popping, but when you watch the tape, he certainly looks like he plays faster than he ran at the combine, has the strength to drag guys along. And in a draft where a number of big-name tight ends went early, to me, it does make sense to draft a tight end there in the third rather than invest sort of that high draft pick capital in a position that typically takes a year or two or sometimes three to develop and contribute. What do you think, Tex?
Yeah, I think the Packers said it best, that this was a perfect match of the board giving them the best player available at a position of need. And it's clear that they really like Sternberger. They met with him, I think, at the Senior Bowl. They met with him at the Combine. They brought him in for a pre-draft visit as well. And so clearly there was an interest level there. And you mentioned the time speed. The Packers said that they timed him at 4.66, I think is what Gutekunst said, compared to the 4.75 that he was recorded at officially, but at the combine. And that seems to make a little more sense based on what you see on the tape. He makes some really impressive athletic catches. And unlike a certain third round tight end about a decade ago, hands do not seem to be an issue for this guy at all. Basically, if you put it anywhere near him, he's going to come down with the football. So I'll be very interested to see how he develops as a blocker. I think there's potential there, and there's certainly a willingness to do that job. And so I think he's got the benefit of being able to come in as a rookie, learn that part of the game from one of the best in Mercedes Lewis, and really, you know, start to develop that portion of his game as a rookie before he's asked to be, you know, potentially a starter in 2020.
I love this pick. You know, I think one thing that I do think this pick and I think it's a Kingsley pick in the fifth, there's a kind of a late bloomer look, you know, catching players on the upswing, and it's similar a little to what Russ Ball kind of saw in Nick Perry before they extended that. It was like Nick Perry ended the season before that, his first 1 year deal on this kind of upswing, including the playoffs. So Sternberger is the most productive tight end in the NCAA last season, I'm pretty sure. I mean, and you can, you know, point to the fact that Fant and Hawkinson, you know, kind of maybe cannibalized each other's production a bit at Iowa. But, you know, Sternberger kind of had everything you want to see in a college tight end production wise. And if the Packers really did time him better than he seemed, the Packers both thought he was a better athlete than he supposedly tested and, you know, have all that production. I think basically they got essentially, I don't see any reason why he can't be the best tight end in this class from a production standpoint. I mean, obviously I think Hawkinson is, you know, obviously the best kind of pure tight end blocking, catching prospect at the position in a long time. I also think that if anybody can screw up a sure thing, you know, early first round draft capital tight end, it's the Detroit Lions, as Eric Ebron amply demonstrated last season. But I think this is a great pick. I think it's a great position for Sternberger because tight ends take a little while to develop, I think, even more so than wide receivers. Graham has this built-in year where he's, you know, both productive and or disposable. And, you know, what else does he have to do than learn and chip in where he can, work on his blocking? I think it's really, I mean, this is maybe the best pick of the draft. It's up there.
Moving right along to round five at pick 150, the aforementioned Kingsley Keke was selected, Texas A&M defensive lineman, another freak athlete, kind of a theme here with Gutekunst in this draft and the last, a guy who's just... he's just made of muscle. He's played all over the defense at Texas A&M, posting 7 sacks and 11 tackles for loss as a defensive end last year. Although, as I mentioned, playing other positions at other body weights previously. I saw actually Rob Domofsky posit that this pick likely closes the door on a possible Mo Wilkerson return. Tex, what do you think of that angle?
No, I definitely think that's probably the way this is going to go. And I think that was all but assured when they gave Keke Wilkerson's number 96 earlier this week too.
Ooh, I missed that. Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the, as Clay Matthews would say, the body's still not even cold yet, But as far as Kiki, I'm really intrigued to find out where they want to put him because, mm-hmm. you know, like we said, you can play him. He says he feels comfortable playing any weight between about 290 and like 330. So you could put him on the nose. You could put him out at 3 tech. You could get him up to maybe 310, 315 and maybe even put him at the 5 tech spot. He's got nice long arms that could contribute out there. I mean, ultimately, I think you look at him year one as being another one of these guys who contributes in a rotation on the interior as a pass rusher. You're cycling through between Clark, Daniels, Za'Darius Smith, Rashawn Gary, now Kiki and Dean Lowry. You've got lots of bodies to throw in that spot. And I think that's going to be really good to keep everybody else fresh. But, that's probably where he makes an impact in his first year, but I could see them, you know, having him bulk up to like 310, maybe be viewed as a potential starting 3 tech. If Mike Daniels ends up, being on the move after 2019 when his contract is up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the rotation element is big here and both from a longevity perspective and a production perspective. I do have to think that if Mike Pettine can scheme 10 sacks for Kyler Fackrell, he should have no problem scheming, you know, a combined 40 sacks for, you know, these 5 guys.
Hey, Fackrell earned those sacks.
Sometimes. You know, I'm not knocking Fackrell.
He did beat Andrew Whitworth once. I mean, that was an impressive individual play. I'll give him that.
He had some great reps last season. I'm not taking anything away from him.
I realize now I sound like I'm besmirching Kyler Fackrell. We already issued our podcast-wide apology, so I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah, no, I'm not besmirching him. I'm also just not, you know, if Russ Ball decides that Kyler Fackrell's time at the Packers is done, that's so be it. You know, I'm not arguing. But I do think that this kind of interchangeable chess piece defense, especially when you look back at the defense that he ran, I think, in Buffalo, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. So you know, it's easy to kind of shift the line at the line, you know, kind of move guys off. You know, I feel pretty safe in saying that most Packers fans came away thinking that last season was a defensive improvement. It's hard not to see kind of more of the same and probably some new wrinkles coming into this season. And that's pretty exciting.
Moving along to round 6, we're getting into the late stages here. Pick 186, Kadar Holman, cornerback from Toledo. Holman has the kind of story that I think Packer fans can really get behind, having no offers out of high school, worked odd jobs, sent tapes to colleges hoping to get an offer and gets a walk-on offer at Toledo, earns a starting corner spot by 2016. Tex, hopefully he's not going to have, you're not going to have to press a 6-round corner into duty right away, but certainly you love the story. You love the commitment that he's shown, and oh yeah, a sub 4 40 yard dash doesn't hurt either, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a really interesting prospect, and like you said, the speed is the big thing that jumps out at you on Holman. But you probably look at him as being a special teamer in year one, right? I mean, that's where a lot of these late round draft picks make their way onto the roster. And I would love to see, let's say, the Packers line up Kadar Holman and Josh Jones as your two gunners. You got 4.36 speed on one side and 4.41 speed and a 215-pound guy on the other side. That's a pretty darn good set of gunners, at least on paper there. But you know, and certainly the way Holman's worked to get to this point, you got to feel optimistic about just him being willing to put in the work on those special teams and develop and earn his way into this roster that way. So there's some, like I said, fun tools to work with. He was another guy who had a pre-draft visit with the Packers. So I actually had him as one of the guys that I was kind of thinking that would be on their radar for day 3. So I was very pleased to see him come to Green Bay in round 6.
He reminds me a lot of Tony Brown.
Yeah. Similar size too. Yeah. Relatively good size, about 6 foot, about 200.
I think they both have about 31 inch arms. They're about the same height and weight. And, I guess Tony Brown, I think, what was Holman's 40 time?
It was either 4.36 or 4.37. Yeah.
Yeah. And, Tony Brown's combine time was 4.35. So, you know, I love Tony Brown. So if we just got another Tony Brown in the 6th round, I'm all for it.
Let's move along to pick 194, still in round six. Dexter Williams, running back from Notre Dame. Listen, just put on the highlight tape, man. I mean, the Packers needed depth at running back, and Williams has that kind of one-cut ability that I think could really do some damage in Matt LaFleur's offense. Hopefully, I think he'll prove once again that you can kind of find talent at running back nearly anywhere in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, really, Williams seems like an Aaron Jones clone almost. He's a little taller, but in terms of their skill set, their explosiveness,
he doesn't have the receiving chops.
He didn't have the numbers that Jones did, but he was definitely used as a receiver in a couple of different ways by Notre Dame in his 1 year as a starter in 2018. So I think there's reason to think that that ability is there if you can kind of develop it. But as far as explosive ability, both he and Jones, they've got that burst that you just can't teach. And for a zone blocking scheme like this, you know, you have to sit back, be patient, and then when you see your gap, you go. And you know, I think he'll be the a real ideal kind of plug and play guy for Jones. I do still think Jamal Williams will get plenty of play in large part because of his pass blocking ability. That's what's going to get him, I think, onto the field more than anything, though. That and his receiving ability that he's shown as well. But as far as a guy who can come in, you know, maybe he can play 10, 15 snaps a game early on, give you a couple of, opportunities for a couple of explosive runs here and there. I think this is a great fit. And honestly, as far as value pick goes, this was a fantastic value, I think, in round six, maybe the best value pick of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if anything, I think the fact that he could easily be the best running back in this class. I do not think this was a strong draft for running backs. And the fact that he has just as good a shot as pretty much anybody else. I mean, he doesn't obviously have the opportunity that, Josh Jacobs has or anything like that, but I don't actually think Josh Jacobs is particularly all that good. So, you know, I think this is another, if more so than the fifth round wide receivers, I think the Gutekunst late round running back might become a thing. And I don't see any reason for there not to be. I mean, I remember, I think we went through this with Jake, and I kind of agree that, you know, it's just like running back attrition is so thick in the league that, like, why would you spend a six rounder on anything else? If there's a running back that you like on the board, like, you're never going to not need a running back. And unless you want that guy to be Capri Bibbs, you know, take him in the sixth round.
Well, and definitely don't trade up into the third round to grab a running back who's slow and not explosive, like a certain Chicago team did this weekend.
Shots fired.
Yeah, I have no idea what Chicago was doing in this draft. And just a complete lack of cap structure considerations. Like, why would, like, their team's going to blow up cap wise in 2 years, and they're trading up picks, not trading down. It's just all right, whatever. Anyway,
rounding out the draft, pick 226 in round seven. Finally, we get a linebacker, Ty Summers from TCU. Seventh round picks are like total flyers, but you know what is interesting here is that there is currently one opening opposite Blake Martinez, and Summers was the only linebacker drafted. So, you know, they'll probably bring in more competition. But you'd think that Summers would have an edge on those guys, and keeping with Goody's trend, this guy is another tremendous athlete for this roster, if nothing else. Tex, what did you think of this pick?
Yeah, I mean, you look for upside in your seventh round picks. I mean, last year they drafted Kendall Donerson, who just had a completely bonkers workout as an edge player. And this year you bring in Summers, who, you know, was an almost similarly crazy workout as an inside linebacker. So, whereas Donerson bounced around from the the practice squad to spend a little bit of time on the roster but never getting in games last year, I think Summers has a better chance of making the opening day roster and actually seeing playing time, if only because, again, special teams is probably going to be his route to doing that. And you could see him with that athletic ability at that position becoming a core special teamer for this team for a long time, as well as, you know, kind of a spot player as a backup or rotational guy on defense. So that's all you really can hope for out of a seventh round pick. Obviously, if he does more than that, then that's just icing on the cake. But you know, there's plenty to like, and he's also, he's interesting because he's played a bunch of different positions too. So again, another versatile guy. He's played defensive end. He's played rush linebacker, off ball linebacker. He's kind of played all over the place. And so, you know, it'll be fun to see what they do with him in the preseason, especially see if they find kind of a role for him on defense. But I'm looking for him to make the roster as a special teamer. You know, maybe as, again, that fourth inside linebacker, and really kind of lock down one of those key special team spots for a while.
Finally, the Packers have filled the void left by the absence of Frank Zombo.
Yeah, the other thing about that is I think, you know, he'll have an edge to making the roster, but I think it also speaks to the belief they have in Oren Burks, right? And I think it's good to see, you know, I hope we don't get into the Thompson, you know, legacy of holding on to Carl Bradford for 4 years or however long it was. But, you know, giving guys a chance, even if their first season wasn't all you thought it should have been, is not, you know, I'm glad to see that Oren Burks, you know, is going to have every opportunity he needs to really contribute to this team, despite, you know, an injury laden first season.
All right, guys, that's all the picks. What about some final thoughts here as we wrap up? How do we feel about this team now? Has the draft changed our thinking or reaffirmed how we felt? Tex, what do you think?
I'm excited to see Petten's defense. I think that's my biggest takeaway from the draft is with, again, you know, it goes back to my comment earlier, but with these versatile guys, lots of different chess pieces for Petten to use. He can hopefully cook up some crazy things in his little mad scientist lair there at Lambeau. And I'm looking for, especially for the pass defense this year, to take a huge step. You've got a lot of youth in that room in the defensive backfield, between Jair Alexander. You got that swagger. You get a little bit of that with Darnell Savage now too. And you get a completely revamped pass rush group, basically. So I'm really excited to see that. And again, as we touched on earlier, you know, the skill position guys kind of stayed the same. So you're counting on improvement on the offensive line, and you're counting on, you know, keeping Aaron Rodgers healthy and hopefully Matt LaFleur's scheme revitalizing him.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the coming out of the draft, I don't know if I'm ever going to not think that Rashawn Gary was a reach at 12, and that might be, you know, whatever. There's only one way to find out, and that's to wait 3 or 4 years, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But the one thing coming out of this is, like, I look at the offense, and I think that LaFleur has really, in some ways, painted himself into a little bit of a corner, maybe, in that scheme is going to be so important. And I'm not sure why, but I'm a little worried that it might get off to a slow start. And I think that I hope he's ready for that. You know, I don't know why I have this. I think part of it is just because they keep talking about running the ball so much. And I'm just like, there's this part of me that's just like, oh my God, like, please don't do this. Like, I'm for running the ball more through Aaron Jones, but I'm not for running the ball for the sake of running the ball. You know, like Nathaniel Hackett running, you know, Fournette into the ground in Jacksonville with Bortles is not the same as what you should be doing with Aaron Rodgers. And I really don't want to go down that road. And I hope too, that the kind of standing pat at wide receiver isn't a reflection of, well, you know, we don't need that many great wide receivers because we're going to run the ball, you know, 54% of the time, but, you know, we'll see. And I know that's a weird takeaway to come away from a draft with, but I do think that there's some indication that they really are kind of lean into the scheme side of things and believe it's a matter of scheme rather than players on the offensive skill side of the ball. And while I don't necessarily disagree, it just means that the scheme has to be good. And I think they've kind of upped the pressure on themselves with that after this draft.
Well, I think a slight twist on your take is that the Packers know that they'll get off to a slow start on offense just because it takes time to install a new system and to see it flourish. And so what they did this offseason and through the draft was to bolster their defense, to try to make things as easy on the offense as possible. I guess that's my slightly opposite take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if those are opposite or glass half empty, glass half full kind of complimentary takes.
There you go. Yeah.
I would go back to looking at Matt LaFleur's past a little bit. So in 2016, when he was the quarterback coach for the Atlanta Falcons, The breakdown of pass to run, it was admittedly a little scary. They had the 12th most rushing attempts in the NFL and only the 26th mm-hmm. most passing attempts in the NFL. But the thing is, they also blew everybody away in yards per attempt in the passing game. They were, even though they were what, like seventh least attempts, they were third in passing yards and second in passing touchdowns. That was Matt Ryan's MVP season. And, you know, they had, again, they had the dual threat with Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman as your running backs. Both of them are, you know, good receiving backs as well. So I would like to look at that offense from that team that year as kind of your blueprint for what you could do with this Packers team. You've got a quarterback who, I mean, Packers fans, I'm sure will certainly agree with me, is a more talented player than Matt Ryan. You've got running backs who I think can play the kind of roles that Freeman and Coleman did in that offense. You've got the receivers, I think. You've got the top-end guy in Adams who can at least be in the conversation now with Julio Jones after what Adams did last year. And I think you've got some promising depth at receiver as well. So the pieces, I think, are there. It's a matter, to me, of kind of trying to bring out the same magic that 2016 Falcons team had. And that would be where I would look to as a blueprint for how to treat this offense this year.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, I think that's a good outcome. If it's 2018 Titans, combined with 2018 first half of 2018 Jacksonville Jaguars, I think we have a little more, trouble. But I mean, you know, there's this part of it that's like, you know, there's no way that Murphy, you know, goes into those guys' interviews and says, hey, can you guys recreate the 2018 Titans offense and the 2018 Jaguars offense? And sure, that's what we're hiring you to do. But, I almost feel like I did not have enough time to react to those hirings. I the Hackett one, I still am kind of flummoxed by. But you know, I'm going to find something to worry about before a season with this much change. So that's what it's going to be, I guess.
That's your new Twitter bio, Ben Foley. I'm going to find something to worry about.
I mean, it's true. I mean, I'm like a weird mix of both not caring and like being pretty, pretty easygoing about all of it, but then like also being able to find weird problems to get worried about that long before I actually need to get worried about them.
Hashtag same. All right, guys. Thank you, Tex. Thank you, Ben. The picks are in. A lot of new faces in Green Bay. It's a brand new day, and hope springs eternal, unless you're Ben Foley on Twitter. So as the offseason progresses and we get closer to real football action in Green Bay, keep it locked in to acmepackingcompany.com and the podcast here at the APC Pod on Twitter. If you like what we're doing here, give us a rating on iTunes, please, and thank you. And until next time, go Pack, go.